I have been putting a static blog on the Fediverse.
Ooh, get you. Is this Hugo, Nicola, or something else?
Not yet, but I'm getting there. So at the moment, it's in a sort of proof of concept stage. I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to learn a bit about how the ActivityPub protocol works and how maybe it helps to actually define what I'm talking about a bit better. So ActivityPub is the protocol that systems like Mastodon use to talk to each other and form a distributed social network. And it's basically a protocol based on a few other web standards that allow servers to send messages to users on other servers.
Clear as mud.
Yeah. And the Fediverse is the slightly awkward name that's given to servers that talk to each other using ActivityPub. The most successful Fediverse application so far has been Mastodon, which does a sort of micro-blogging thing, a bit like Twitter. But it's also possible to put a full-blown long-form blog that publishes to the Fediverse as well. So WordPress, for example, has an ActivityPub plugin, which means that you can subscribe to a WordPress blog via an ActivityPub client, and you can reply to posts and so on.
Does that mean you're posting entire articles into the Fediverse, or does it mean an announcement with a link to an article goes into the Fediverse?
This isn't. You have an account on Mastodon somewhere, and you post on WordPress, and WordPress uses your Mastodon account to share a link to your WordPress blog. This is your WordPress blog is itself a Fediverse ActivityPub server. So you can follow an account on your WordPress server from Mastodon or another ActivityPub client.
My brain has been turning over whilst you've been explaining this, and I think the penny is just dropping.
Basically, if you think about it like this, so WordPress already, you publish a blog on WordPress, and as well as you being able to read those articles on a web page, it also generates an RSS feed. Mm-hmm. Now, by exactly the same token, it can generate an ActivityPub outbox, which people can then subscribe to.
Okay. So in this setup with WordPress, which I know is not where you're going with this, but in this WordPress setup, you still have a website where your blogs are published, but also effectively like an account or a presence on Mastodon, which is also like a full fat version of your articles that other people can subscribe to consume them directly in Mastodon or other ActivityPub connected applications.
Exactly.
Okay.
How is this different from just posting long form articles to a Mastodon account and someone subscribing to an account that posts long form articles?
You also have a nice looking web page where those articles live.
Are you saying that looking at Mastodon in a web page does not look nice? Is that what you're saying? No, I get what you're saying. It's a nicely themed, it looks like a blog, but also appears. Okay, I think we get where you're going with this.
The other thing is, this is something I'm going to come back to in a minute, but because WordPress is a full-blown web application, you could also send replies from Mastodon to WordPress, and then they can become comments on the article.
Okay.
Right. So, step away from WordPress, and we're all fans of the static site generator, aren't we?
We are.
Oh, yes.
Where you have some source files and you run a script and it basically compiles them into some HTML and all you publish is the HTML. So, I got thinking about this and I thought, in theory, you should be able to have the bit where it, like you can do that and still generate an RSS feed for people to subscribe to. You should still be able to generate the outbox part, the read-only part of the ActivityPub protocol, whereby people should be able to find your blog via ActivityPub and read your articles. So I got looking into, has anyone done this and how might I go about it? And I found a few resources. One thing I found that was quite useful is a site called ActivityPub.academy, which is where someone has made basically a modified Mastodon instance where you can send requests and it'll show you what messages are being sent back and forth. And then they've got a blog that accompanies that, which explains what's going on. And I also found another blog, which I'll share, who's actually gone through a lot of making his blog a static blog available on Mastodon, but using a lot of Vercel serverless functions. That's another static hosting platform that also lets you run bits of code. So I sort of got into modifying what's been done a bit and trying to do it just with static files. And I've actually managed to get to the point, not with my real blog yet, which is a Jekyll blog hosted on GitHub, but with just a static demo version of a blog. You can actually search for my user in Mastodon and you find my blog and you can bring it up the sort of account page. It gives you the sort of metadata of the blog and tells you how many posts there are. What it doesn't do yet is show you the posts. So there are still some rough edges to work out. And one of the main issues I found is that there aren't very good tools for validating and debugging an ActivityPub server. Even this ActivityPub Academy site is useful, but it seems like Mastodon does a lot of caching of requests for the endpoint URLs, which means that when I'm changing the outbox that I'm trying to manually craft to get it to show my posts, it's then not updating what I'm doing. And some of the original tools which were created when ActivityPub was created have now gone away. So what I'm hoping I'll be able to do and update you on over future shows is, as well as actually making it discoverable, making it followable, which will involve some sort of endpoint somewhere, perhaps an AWS Lambda function, which needs to respond back to any requests for a follow you get to confirm them and then store the followers somewhere. Also notify followers of new posts. That's part of the protocol, is that once you've got a list of followers, when you make a new post, you actually send the post to those followers and that's how they get notified. And then in the long run, seeing if it's possible to do something similar for replies, which would actually mean receiving the message with the reply in and then triggering a real build of the site, including that as a comment on the article.
Once it's been moderated, potentially.
Ah, yes. And of course, adding a moderation step in there. So perhaps, yeah, having it put them in a queue and then I either accept them and that triggers the rebuild or I throw them away. So there's still quite a lot to do here, but I was actually quite impressed that in a couple of hours yesterday evening playing with this, I did manage to get to the point of making it discoverable on a real URL and having it appear in Mastodon without it being Mastodon or knowing anything about Mastodon.
I've often thought that I'd like to do something more dynamic with my blog, but because I'm using a static site generator, that limits me a little bit. And I've gone down the route of embedding comments as a GitHub conversation. So I'm not entirely happy with that. I would rather it was something like this that integrated with the Fediverse or Mastodon specifically or whatever. I would like something like this because, well, I think it would be more interesting, more fun, and I don't like relying on GitHub for my comments. But I've not quite figured out, I mean, I don't have the programming brain for it, but I haven't quite figured out how you do that, how you do the programmatic side. So I'm interested to follow along with this and see where it goes, because I would quite like to have similar kind of thing, even if I'm not using the whole platform to publish the blog. Just the comments bit would be interesting, I think.
Yeah, well, I'll share the links to what I've been using to learn in the show notes, and hopefully I'll be able to blog about it on my Fediverse-enabled blog before too long.
And hopefully people can find it.
I have published my very first Rust project.
Oh, God, are you one of them now?
Apparently, but although I have a Rust project that works, I did not write a single line of code.
Okay.
A little while ago, I developed a prototype shell script, which you give it the URL to an archive.org page, and it digs out the XML file that exposes all of the assets associated with that archive.org page. It's an XML document, and you can then pass that and you can download all of the files associated with it. And I developed this because I wanted to download some scans of retro magazines from the 1980s. And although there is some torrent capability on archive.org, it's not very reliable. But the downloading all of the files listed in the XML metadata is a very reliable way of doing this. So I wrote a shell script to do that. And I've realized in recent times that some of my shell scripts have immediately become technical debt. And I wanted to avoid that happening again. So we use a lot of Rust at work, and I thought this would be an opportunity to take a small, tightly bound program and learn some Rust and write a Rust implementation of this simple program. And the properties are run the program, pass it a URL, it then iterates over the XML document it downloads and then subsequently downloads every file listed in the XML. So that's the scope of the program.
So did you just feed your bash shell script into a turn my shell script into Rust machine? Or was it more than that?
Bash to Rust.
Yeah, with a number two in there.
So I didn't. I sort of did that. So just recently I subscribed for access to ChatGPT-4. And what I decided to do was see just how far I could get along the path of creating an actual working program with zero experience of the language that I was using. Now, obviously, I come into this with some understanding of programming, but it is fair to say that when I started this, I had pretty much no appreciation for how to craft a Rust program, and now I only have a little appreciation about it. So I felt this was a good one to try, because I can't tell if the code being generated is legitimate or not, because I have no experience with the language. So this is what I did. I logged into ChatGPT and I provided a prompt which sort of described what I wanted it to do. And it produced some code. And I actually typed this prompt into my phone whilst I was in a restaurant with a couple of my colleagues last week when we were at PackagingCon. And I showed them my phone. Graham and Elko are my colleagues, and they are both accomplished Rust developers. And I think Graham said, well, that looks like what I would do. It looks disgustingly good. So I was like, okay, we'll give that a go. So the next day, I copy and pasted that initial bit of code out and pasted it into a default cargo init Rust project.
Spoken like a true Rust developer, of course. Well, yeah. you're passing for me.
To be fair, I did ask my colleague Luke to give me the absolute first start, and he said just run cargo init. That will give you the skeleton of a Rust program, and then you can go from there. So I did that, and then I edited my main.rs. I pasted the thing in, and it spat out a load of compiler errors at me. So what I did is I highlighted the compiler error and then pasted that into the next response in ChatGPT. And I said, the program you provided generates this error message. How do I fix it? And then paste the message in. And I love the dialogue at this point, because it says, oh, I'm terribly sorry for my oversight. I didn't account for the fact. And then it spits out then a whole sort of rationale as to what uses, so these are imports or includes in Rust, were missing and how I needed to adapt the code. So it gave me just change these bits of your Rust program. But because I'm not familiar with Rust, I was thinking, I'm not certain where I'm supposed to be pasting this in. So I type in, please update the original program with these changes. And it says, certainly. And then a new version of the program gets spat out. And I went around that, finding an error and asking it how to fix the error. And two goes round, my Rust program compiled, and it worked.
To be clear, just so everyone can hear, Martin did bunny ears when he said it worked, right?
It did what I'd asked it to do.
Is this like the cursed monkey hand?
Yeah, it did what I'd asked it to do, but I hadn't correctly scoped my original question. So then I went through a couple of iterations of, prepend the file in the XML with the base URL that the XML file is found, and it spits out some more Rust at me, and I paste that into the appropriate place. And I do indeed get a program does exactly what I needed. So I show this to my boss, Graham, and he's bowled over, eyes out on stalks, that this is even a thing. So he's like, Right, okay, well, let's make this harder. So he said, see if you can adapt it so it will do like 4 concurrent downloads at a time. So I type into ChatGPT that I want it to do this, and it gives me a revision of the program and more errors, and I ask it how to solve these errors. And Graham's looking over my shoulder at this point, and he's like, I don't believe that the answers it's giving you are like so accurate. This is exactly what I would be doing now if I was writing this. Mm. And indeed, I went through a couple of iterations of that, and out came the program that now concurrently downloads 4 files listed in the XML at a time. And I got a program that worked.
So how long end to end? It sounds like you were sat in a restaurant, so you did some of it, I guess, on your phone, and then some of it you continued on a laptop to do the Rust compiling and stuff. And like end to end, from having no Rust code to having something that downloads 4 files in parallel, like meeting the spec. How much time was that, do you think?
It was 5 minutes in the restaurant the night before and about half an hour sat at the computer the next day.
Oh, man. And how much compute time do you think you used up for ChatGPT? It's an unfathomable amount.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think I've started to sort of hit the limits of what you can do with this, and I've learned some things along the way. I think asking it to do whole programs is beyond the scope of ChatGPT. As I understand it, there's only so many tokens it can keep in its frame of reference. So as soon as you get sort of a complex program, then it starts to hallucinate a little bit. And I sort of ran into that, where it was reusing variable names, and, you know, that was obviously breaking things. And the other issue I believe I've run into is that ChatGPT has a 2021 problem, and some of the crates in Rust have got new methods or different functionality, and ChatGPT doesn't know about that.
I've actually found a very similar problem trying to get it to write PHP code for Moodle. Moodle's ever-evolving system with a lot of legacy to it. And if you ask it for examples of Moodle code, it gets some of it right, and it gets some of it the version you would have done 5 years ago.
Right.
I think you're using the wrong tool for the job. You should be using GitHub Copilot for this, because with GitHub Copilot, you would mentally break it down into a set of functions, describe the function, it would write the function, and then you would write the next function. And Copilot is very good at remembering variable names throughout the code and being consistent throughout the code. And so I get that you probably didn't use that because you were sat in a bar and it's not quite so straightforward to open up VS Code on your phone. I get that. And so you wanted to test ChatGPT. But I feel like if you did the same thing with Copilot, maybe it would be more successful or faster or more efficient or less error prone. I don't know.
I think you've just given us some insight into part 2 of this debate, because it occurred to me, I had Copilot on and it was making contradictory recommendations. And it occurred to me, I should probably have another go round at this, where I just use Copilot and see how similar or different or how easier that process might be. So yes, this is a little program that I intend to take to conclusion. And next time round, I'm going to use Copilot and see how it fares.
I have resuscitated a Nextcloud box that was languishing in my loft for 6 years.
Was it pining for the fjords?
Oh my gosh, is this that plastic thing?
Yes.
With all the janky wires?
Yes. So I did a blog post about this a little while ago, about some of this. The Nextcloud box, for those who don't know, it was a collaboration between Nextcloud and Western Digital, and I think Canonical may have had a hand in this as well. And it's a plastic box about the dimensions of a Mac Mini, bit smaller, and all you can fit inside it is a Raspberry Pi and a laptop size hard drive. And that's all that's inside it, is a Raspberry Pi and a laptop size hard drive. And that's how you get it from Western Digital. It was made by their like Skunk Works team called WD Labs back in 2016, 2017. And I ordered one. I thought, hey, this is interesting. I'll be able to have my little Nextcloud box, and it's got a Nextcloud logo on it, and it's just got magnets that hold the top and the bottom together. So it's very easy. You just pop the lid off. You can put an SD card in, attach a network cable, power, boom, you're away. And so I set it up and discovered that Nextcloud is not great for my use case on a Raspberry Pi, whatever it was, back in 2017, 2016. And so it went back in the cardboard box and off up into the junkyard in the sky, which is my attic. Anyway, I was up there trawling for things to put on eBay recently, and I saw that, and I thought, oh, I wonder if I could get rid of that. I wonder if anyone would want that. Well, I wonder if there's anything on it. And so I went through a process of booting it up, and it's running old software from 2017. And slightly frustratingly, it was a bit broken. The snap daemon on it would keep dying. I don't know why. I don't know if it was broken when I put it in a box or whether it's recently become broken since then, but the software is broken. I could just about get Nextcloud to start up, and I could see some photos on there that I had synchronized from my phone at the time. And these are photos I don't have anywhere else other than on the Nextcloud box, because I was trying out synchronization. I took a few photos and they got synchronized to my Nextcloud box and never got synchronized anywhere else. So it was quite nice to recover some of those photos. That was quite fun. And I thought, do I try and recover this? I started a thread on the Snapcraft forum asking for help to try and fix this, but nobody jumped in. And I'm not surprised, because it's a box from 6 years ago that's got a very old version of software. And the easiest thing to do is to just splat it and reinstall. So I thought, well, I don't really want a Nextcloud box. What shall I do with it? And someone suggested Home Assistant.
Ah.
Yeah. So I actually swapped the Pi 2 out for a Pi 3 and then went and found the instructions for installing Home Assistant, which was basically download some stuff, put it on an SD card, boot the thing up and let it chug away. And it's all done. The installation process was a little bit strange, in that it does a load of Docker stuff, which, not a fan. But it was so painfully slow to do the initial setup, to the point where it actually errored. And I got an error that basically said the installation has failed. And I took a screenshot of this and posted. I thought, well, where am I going to get help? I'll try the Home Assistant forum. So I went to the Home Assistant forum, signed in, posted this screenshot that said, this thing's busted. I don't know what to do now. What should I do? And I got the usual don't post screenshots, post logs. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know how to get the logs because this thing doesn't look like it's actually installed. But I went back and forth, and eventually it just carried on. It initially said it had failed to install, but it was lying. It actually had installed and it carried on. And I now have Home Assistant installed. And I was keen on installing it because everyone keeps raving about it being an alternative to having, all these big tech company devices managing your lights and other devices in the house. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let's give myself a backup and I'll install Home Assistant. And for the most part, yeah, it seems to work.
Have you been able to replace things like the Hue Home Hub with Home Assistant, or does Home Assistant talk to a Home Hub?
So I still have the Philips Hue little box with the button on the top. Mm-hmm. I still have that, and I've got Hue light bulbs all over the house. I haven't got rid of that because I don't think my Nextcloud can talk to the light bulbs because I haven't got the Zigbee radio
right.
In my, did I say Nextcloud? I meant Home Assistant box.
Yeah. I was following. Yeah.
Yes, my Home Nextcloud Assistant box. I don't have the Zigbee radio or whatever the type of radio it is that it needs to talk to the light bulbs. And also, I don't really want to break all the light bulbs because I'm not the only person who lives in this house, and I want mm-hmm. other people to be able to turn the lights on and off. So I'm not going to replace it just yet. If that is possible, and if I can get like a USB stick I can plug into the Pi that's in the box and replace the Philips thing, that would be great. So long as everything carries on working for everyone else. Now, everyone in this house has an iPhone, and there's buttons on the screen to turn lights on and off on an iPhone. I don't know if that integrates with Home Assistant or whether I would have to use the Home Assistant app. I don't know how compatible it is. I haven't looked into it that deeply. I also have the hue switches on the walls. So you can turn the lights on and off by, like, when you walk in a room, you can just bash the light switch and turn everything on without having to shout at anything or get your phone out.
So hold on. You've got light bulbs with a switch on the wall and you can turn the light bulbs on and off using that switch.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Also, you can pull the light switch off the wall and walk away with it and then sit on the sofa and then press the button and turn the lights on and off. So yeah, one up on your old school light switches. So I don't know. I haven't super investigated Home Assistant. I found it's a little bit of a bag of spanners. The user interface is a bit strange in that the stuff is hidden like three levels deep in menus. Even just the reboot option is hidden like three levels deep, and you have to Google to find out how to reboot the thing. It's not obvious. However, there are some things that are quite good. Like, I logged into it yesterday and there was a little notification at the top that said there's a Home Assistant update. I just pressed the button and it did an update and rebooted and everything was fine. Everything carried on working, right? I've added and replaced light bulbs and changed some things in the house, and the Home Assistant's recognized that, and it's just worked. But I'm not really doing anything super intensive with it, and I'm keen to hear what other people are doing with their Home Assistants, other than like replace the Hue, for example, and replace other things. Oh, I must actually mention, the thing that triggered this was seeing online someone mention me on Mastodon by saying that their Home Assistant was speaking in my voice. And I thought, hang on a minute, how does that work? And it turns out that there is Home Assistant modules that can make it act like an Echo Dot or a, mm-hmm. you know, a Google thing. And you could talk to it and ask it the status of stuff. And someone said that their Home Assistant was telling them the status of their dishwasher in my voice in their house, because it had obviously used the voice that I'd donated to Mycroft. So that kind of thing sounds fun, having my voice shouting at the kids or something. That sounds like a good idea, but I don't know what else to do with it.
When you were investigating getting the data out of your car, you found this project called Bimmer. Wasn't that like from a Home Assistant module? Could you integrate your car with Home Assistant in some fashion?
That's a good point. Yes, you're right. When I first looked at the Bimmer code, I think it was called,
right.
I think part of it was a Home Assistant module. And that's another thing that I found interesting, is there are these modules that you can add in, and there are some stark warnings in there, quite aggressive warnings about, you know, yes, I have definitely read the documentation. Yes, I am an expert. Before you carry on, it, like, they've clearly had a lot of newbies try this stuff because they've heard about it, mm-hmm. try this stuff out, and then gone and hunted down support. And I think the support people have been overloaded. So they've put lots of very bright, punch you in the face warnings in this stuff. And so I'm a little bit wary because, yeah, it's not essential. It's not in production yet. And if I break it, it doesn't really matter. But it does make me a little bit wary of installing stuff like the Bimmer code thing and other additional extensions, because the basic functionality doesn't seem to do an awful lot. I think I need extensions to make this an actual useful device. Because right now it's just sitting there with a bunch of switches on screen and I can switch the lights on and off, and that's about all I can do. So I think I might look into the Bimmer code thing, but I'm not sure what that will give me, whether it will give me the graphs and charts that, you know, or what. I don't know. But I'm interested to hear from the audience, like, if they've got Home Assistant, what they use it for. And if there's anything that I could easily install, bearing in mind this is on a Pi 3, so it's not super fast, it's not the most powerful device in the world, but it is working. Oh, one other thing I should mention. I mentioned that the Nextcloud box has a hard drive in it. There's a whole thing in Home Assistant where you could just press a button and say, move the installation from the SD card onto the hard drive, and it just sits there and chugs away and then just goes, done. I was quite impressed with that. That was pretty neat. It just wiped the hard drive and moved everything over there. So I've got more space now, so I can install loads of stuff and do stuff with it. But yeah, I want to know more. I want to know more. What can I do with my Home Assistant?